Chapter 8. Us, and on one occasion the old bill stickers went to Trafalgar Square to attempt to post bills when they were given in custody by the watchman in their employ and fined at Queen Square £5, as they would not allow any of us to speak in the office. But when they were gone, we had an interview with the magistrate, who mitigated the fine to 15 shillings. During the time the men were waiting for the fine, this company started off to a public house that we were in the habit of using, and waited for us coming back, where a fighting scene took place that beggars description. Shortly after this, the principal one day came and shook hands with us, and acknowledged that he had broken up the company, and that he himself had lost £500 in trying to overthrow us. We then took possession of the hoarding in Trafalgar Square, but Messrs. Grissel and Pito would not allow us to post our bills on the said hoarding without paying them, and from first to last we paid upwards of £200 for that hoarding, and likewise the hoarding of the Reform Clubhouse, Pall Mall. Apostrophe, His Majesty, being now completely out of breath, laid down his scroll which he appeared to have finished, puffed at his pipe, and took some rum and water. I embraced the opportunity of asking how many divisions the art and mystery of bill sticking comprised. He replied, 3 auctioneer's bill sticking, theatrical bill sticking, general bill sticking. The auctioneer's porters, apostrophe said the king, who do their bill sticking, are mostly respectable and intelligent, and generally well paid for their work, whether in town or country. The price paid by the principal auctioneers for country work is 9 shillings per day, that is, 7 shillings for day's work, 1 shilling for lodging, and 1 for paste. Town work is 5 shillings a day, including paste. Apostrophe, town work must be rather hot work, apostrophe said I, if there be many of those fighting scenes that beggar description, among the bill stickers? Apostrophe, apostrophe, well, apostrophe replied the king, I and a stranger, I assure you, 2 black eyes, a bill sticker ought to know how to handle his fists a bit. As to that row I have mentioned, that grew out of competition, conducted in an uncompromising spirit. Besides a man and a horse and shay continually following us about, the company had a watchman on duty, night and day, to prevent us sticking bills upon the hoarding in Trafalgar Square. We went there, early one morning, to stick bills, and to blackwash their bills, if we were interfered with. We were interfered with, and I gave the word for laying on the wash. It was laid on pretty brisk, and we were all taken to Queen Square. But they couldn't find me. I knew that, apostrophe with a bright smile I'd only give directions I was only the general. Apostrophe charmed with this monarch's affability, I inquired if he had ever hired a hoarding himself. Hired a large one, apostrophe he replied, opposite the Lyceum Theatre, when the buildings was there. Paid £30 for it. Let out places on it, and called it the external paper hanging station. But it didn't answer. Ah! Apostrophe said His Majesty thoughtfully, as he filled the glass, bill stickers have a deal to contend with. The bill sticking clause was got into the police act by a member of parliament that employed me at his election. The clause is pretty stiff respecting where bills go, but he didn't mind where his bills went. It was all right enough, so long as they was his bills. Apostrophe, fearful that I observed a shadow of misanthropy on the king's cheerful face, I asked whose ingenious invention that was, which I greatly admired, of sticking bills under the arches of the bridges. Mine. Apostrophe, apostrophe said His Majesty. I was the first that ever stuck a bill under a bridge. Imitators soon rose up, of course. When don't they? But they stuck 'em at low water, and the tide came and swept the bills clean away. I knew that. Apostrophe the king laughed. What may be the name of that instrument, like an immense fishing rod, apostrophe I inquired, with which bills are posted on high places? Apostrophe the joints, apostrophe returned His Majesty. Now, we use the joints, where formerly we used ladders as they do still in country places. Once, when Madame Vestris, understood, was playing in Liverpool, another bill sticker and me were added together on the wall outside the Clarence Dock me with the joints him on a ladder. Lord! I had my bill up, right over his head, yards above him, ladder and all, while he was crawling to his work. The people going in, and out of the docks, stood and laughed. It's about 30 years since the joints come in. Apostrophe, are there any bill stickers who can read? Apostrophe, I took the liberty of inquiring. Some, apostrophe, said the king. But they know which is the right side up arts of their work. They keep it as it's given out to them. I have seen a bill or so stuck wrong side up arts. But it's very rare. Apostrophe, our discourse sustained some interruption at this point, by the procession of cars occasioning a stoppage of about 3/4 of a mile in length, as nearly as I could judge. His Majesty, however, entreating me not to be discomposed by the contingent uproar, smoked with great placidity, and surveyed the firmament. When we were again in motion, I begged to be informed what was the largest poster His Majesty had ever seen. The king replied, a 36-sheet poster. Apostrophe I gathered, also, that there were about 150 bill stickers in London, and that His Majesty considered an average hand equal to the posting of 100 bills, single sheets, in a day. The king was of opinion that, although posters had much increased in size, they had not increased in number, as the abolition of the state lotteries had occasioned a great falling off, especially in the country. Over and above which change, I bet that myself, that the custom of advertising in newspapers had greatly increased. The completion of many London improvements, as Trafalgar Square, I particularly observed the singularity of His Majesty's calling that an improvement, the Royal Exchange, and sea had of late years reduced the number of advantageous posting places. Bill stickers at present rather confine themselves to districts than to particular descriptions of work. One man would strike over Whitechapel, another would take round Houndsditch, Shoreditch, and the City Road. One, the king said, would stick to the Surrey side. Another would make a beat of the West End. His Majesty remarked, with some approach to severity, on the neglect of delicacy and taste, gradually introduced into the trade by the new school. A profligate and inferior race of impostors who took jobs at almost any price, to the detriment of the old school, and the confusion of their own misguided employers. He considered that the trade was overdone with competition, and observed, speaking of his subjects, there are too many of them. Apostrophe he believed, still, that things were a little better than they had been, adducing, as a proof, the fact that particular posting places were now reserved, by common consent, for particular posters. Those places, however, must be regularly occupied by those posters, or they lapsed and fell into other hands. It was of no use giving a man a Drury Lane bill this week and not next. Where was it to go? He was of opinion that going to the expense of putting up your own board on which your sticker could display your own bills was the only complete way of posting yourself at the present time. But, even to effect this, on payment of a shilling a week to the keepers of steamboat piers and other such places, you must be able, besides, to give orders for theaters and public exhibitions, or you would be sure to be cut out by somebody. His Majesty regarded the passion for orders as one of the most unappeasable appetites of human nature. If there were a building, or if there were repairs, going on, anywhere, you could generally stand something, and make it right with the foreman of the works. But, orders would be expected from you, and the man who could give the most orders was the man who would come off best. There was this other objectionable point, in orders, that workmen sold them for drink, and often sold them to persons who were likewise troubled with the weakness of thirst. Which led, His Majesty said, to the presentation of your orders at theater doors, by individuals who were too shakery to derive intellectual profit from the entertainments, and who brought a scandal on you. Finally, His Majesty said that you could hardly put too little in a poster. What you wanted was two or three good catch lines for the eye to rest on, then leave it alone, and there you were. These are the minutes of my conversation with His Majesty, as I noted them down shortly afterwards. I am not aware that I have been betrayed into any alteration or suppression. The manner of the king was frank in the extreme, and he seemed to me to avoid at once that slight tendency to repetition which may have been observed in the conversation of His Majesty King George III, and that slight undercurrent of egotism which the curious observer may perhaps detect in the conversation of Napoleon Bonaparte. I must do the king the justice to say that it was I, and not he, who closed the dialogue. At this juncture, I became the subject of a remarkable optical delusion. The legs of my stool appeared to me to double up, the car to spin round and round with great violence, and a mist to arise between myself and His Majesty. In addition to these sensations, I felt extremely unwell. I refer these unpleasant effects either to the paste with which the posters were affixed to the van, which may have contained some small portion of arsenic, or to the printer's ink, which may have contained some equally deleterious ingredient. Of this, I cannot be sure. I am only sure that I was not affected either by the smoke or the rum and water. I was assisted out of the vehicle in a state of mind which I have only experienced in two other places. I allude to the pier at Dover and to the corresponding portion of the town of Calais, and sat upon a doorstep until I recovered. The procession had then disappeared. I have since looked anxiously for the king in several other cars, but I have not yet had the happiness of seeing His Majesty. B.I.R.T.H.S. Mrs. Meek, of a son? My name is Meek. I am, in fact, Mr. Meek. That son is mine and Mrs. Meek's. When I saw the announcement in the Times, I dropped the paper. I had put it in, myself, and paid for it, but it looked so noble that it overpowered me. As soon as I could compose my feelings, I took the paper up to Mrs. Meek's bedside. Maria Jane, apostrophe said I allude to Mrs. Meek, you are now a public character. Apostrophe we read the review of our child, several times, with feelings of the strongest emotion, and I sent the boy who cleans the boots and shoes to the office for 15 copies. No reduction was made on taking that quantity. It is scarcely necessary for me to say that our child had been expected. In fact, it had been expected, with comparative confidence, for some months. Mrs. Meek's mother, who resides with us of the name of Bigby, had made every preparation for its admission to our circle. I hope and believe I am a quiet man. I will go farther. I know I am a quiet man. My constitution is tremulous, my voice was never loud, and, in point of stature, I have been from infancy small. I have the greatest respect for Maria Jane's mama. She is a most remarkable woman. I honor Maria Jane's mama. In my opinion, she would storm a town, single-handed, with a hearth broom, and carry it. I have never known her to yield any point whatever to mortal man. She is calculated to terrify the stoutest heart. Still, but I will not anticipate. The first intimation I had of any preparations being in progress on the part of Maria Jane's mama was one afternoon, several months ago. I came home earlier than usual from the office, and, proceeding into the dining room, found an obstruction behind the door which prevented it from opening freely. It was an obstruction of a soft nature. On looking in, I found it to be a female. The female in question stood in the corner behind the door, consuming sherry wine. From the nutty smell of that beverage pervading the apartment, I have no doubt she was consuming a second glassful. She wore a black bonnet of large dimensions, and was copious in figure. The expression of her countenance was severe and discontented. The words to which she gave utterance on seeing me were these: "Oh, get along with you, sir, if you please. Me and Mrs. Bigby don't want no male parties here. apostrophe apostrophe, that female was Mrs. Prodgett. I immediately withdrew, of course. I was rather hurt, but I made no remark. Whether it was that I showed a lowness of spirits after dinner, in consequence of feeling that I seemed to intrude, I cannot say. But, Maria Jane's mama said to me on her retiring for the night, in a low distinct voice, and with a look of reproach that completely subdued me, "George Meek, Mrs. Prodgett is your wife's nurse. Apostrophe apostrophe, I bear no ill will towards Mrs. Prodgett. Is it likely that I, writing this with tears in my eyes, should be capable of deliberate animosity towards a female, so essential to the welfare of Maria Jane? I am willing to admit that fate may have been to blame, and not Mrs. Prodgett, but it is undeniably true that the latter female brought desolation and devastation into my lowly dwelling. We were happy after her first appearance. We were sometimes exceedingly so. But whenever the parlor door was opened, and apostrophe Mrs. Prodgett, apostrophe apostrophe announced, and she was very often announced, misery ensued. I could not bear Mrs. Prodgett's look. I felt that I was far from wanted, and had no business, to exist in Mrs. Prodgett's presence. Between Maria Jane's mama and Mrs. Prodgett, there was a dreadful, secret understanding, a dark mystery and conspiracy, pointing me out as a being to be shunned. I appeared to have done something that was evil. Whenever Mrs. Prodgett called, after dinner, I retired to my dressing room, where the temperature is very low indeed, in the wintry time of the year, and sat looking at my frosty breath as it rose before me, and at my rack of boots, a serviceable article of furniture, but never, in my opinion, an exhilarating object. The length of the councils that were held with Mrs. Prodgett, under these circumstances, I will not attempt to describe. I will merely remark that Mrs. Prodgett always consumed sherry wine while the deliberations were in progress, that they always ended in Maria Jane's being in wretched spirits on the sofa, and that Maria Jane's mama always received me, when I was recalled, with a look of desolate triumph that too plainly said, "Now, George Meek, you see my child, Maria Jane, a ruin, and I hope you are satisfied." Apostrophe apostrophe, I pass, generally, over the period that intervened between the day when Mrs. Prodgett entered her protest against male parties, and the ever memorable midnight when I brought her to my unobtrusive home in a cab, with an extremely large box on the roof, and a bundle, a bandbox, and a basket between the driver's legs. I have no objection to Mrs. Prodgett, aided and abetted by Mrs. Bigby, who I never can forget as the parent of Maria Jane, taking entire possession of my unassuming establishment. In the recesses of my own breast, the thought may linger that a man in possession cannot be so dreadful as a woman, and that woman Mrs. Prodgett. But I ought to bear a good deal, and I hope I can, and do. Huffing and snubbing prey upon my feelings, but I can bear them without complaint. They may tell in the long run. I may be hustled about from post to pillar beyond my strength. Nevertheless, I wish to avoid giving rise to words in the family. The voice of nature, however, cries aloud in behalf of Augustus George, my infant son. It is for him that I wish to utter a few plaintive household words. I am not at all angry. I am mild but miserable. I wish to know why, when my child, Augustus George, was expected in our circle, a provision of pins was made, as if the little stranger were a criminal who was to be put to the torture immediately, on Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.